It's the 9th, right? 9th of April. And exam number 3 is this Tuesday. So it's going to cover chapter 17, ratio analysis. Make sure you have your formula sheet for chapter 17. And I'll give you a balance sheet and a cash flow statement. Income statement, not cash flow statement. 7, can you beat the market? All stars of investing, rational markets, efficient markets. Chapter 8, investor psychology. And then we're going to finish up chapter 8 today with technical analysis. And the questions will not be anything like, you're not going to have to do anything that we talk about in here today because it's voodoo anyway. But we will also discuss chapters 5. We'll also cover chapter 5, Introduction to Stocks. So keep studying that. This is the stuff you have to know. And then from chapter 6, the constant perpetual growth model and discounted cash flow model. So bring your present value table, your formula for chapter 6, one page of handwritten notes, calculator, Scantron. And what's due today? Chapter 6 is due today, right? Or is it 17? 17. 17 is due today. Right. Chapter 6 was due before. Thank you, Isaiah. Was due before. So get them in. Just get them in. Keep working. And we came in and it looked like we were down a couple of percent. But no, Starbucks did not drop in price, half in price. Starbucks split 2-for-1. So I've never seen this before. So I don't know if the system... It split 2-for-1, so I had to go in there and double the number of shares and drop the price in half. And by the end of the day, who knows, Yahoo might come in there and do that automatically, so I'll have to go back and redo that, undo it. But we're still up, almost 5%. That's pretty good. Very reputable. Questions, thoughts? Anyone want to sell anything?
Sell Caterpillar?
How many of you want to sell Caterpillar? 1. 2, 3, 4, 5. No? What would you replace it with? Just cash? That's the cash. Yeah. Anybody want to buy anything new? We've done okay with Apple and First Solar. We've done okay. Procter & Gamble. Hey, Value Line warned us. But it's a good long-term investment, folks. Dividends don't lie. All right, so let's get now back to Chapter 8. And we had gone through the different investor weaknesses, and make sure you understand those. But now we're going to take a look at technical analysis, because the two main schools of thought, but first we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? I got plenty of bad. One of the students in yesterday's class had a really bad joke. It was just horrible. You like the Battle of the Sexes jokes? Did you hear about the CIA was looking for a killer? They put an ad in the paper for an assassin, and they got lots of applications. So they whittled it down to 4 hardened, cold-blooded killers, 3 guys and a woman. And as a last test of their steely nature, they gave them each a gun and put them in front of a door and said, "In that room is your spouse. We want you to go in there and kill him." And the 3 guys said, "I'm not going to kill myself. You're out of your mind." The woman calmly took the gun, walked in, closed the door, and you heard bang, 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 bang. And then you heard somebody screaming for help, and then silence. And she comes down, she's covered in blood. She said, "Some idiot put blanks in the gun." So I had to beat him to death. Remember that, guys. Yeah. Okay, so we... On Tuesday, you didn't laugh. You guys haven't been married long enough. We said that they're the fundamental analysts, and that's what we were doing in chapter 6 and 17. And then there's the technical analysts, and these people don't believe, well, maybe some of them, because there's this continuum, there's this spectrum, and some people like me are all the way over here and don't believe any of this voodoo. And there are other people who say, "No, he doesn't understand what he's talking about. He hasn't lost enough money yet." So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at some of the technical indicators, and we're going to take a look at some of the procedures that the technical analysts do. And I can't help you at all other than to warn you that this stuff is, I don't think it means anything at all. So we discussed the argument in favor of it, that we see stocks going up in tandem with the market as a whole. So if we see the rising tide, but that's just supply and demand, and we don't know how to predict the short-term behavior of the stock market. So here are some of the techniques that they use. They often use momentum buying. The trend is your friend. They see the market going up, they buy. They see the market going up, they sell, or they sell short to try to take advantage of prices going down. We'll discuss shorting in detail later on. They create these support levels and these resistance levels. And they, what? George is going to teach. George, would you like to take over? They will tell you with absolute certainty that the support level for this stock or the stock market as a whole is this number. Where they get that, I don't know. They see the squiggle on the line. Or the resistance level. Now, what are we talking about here? Well, we're going to jump forward to a few slides to show you the support level and the resistance level on some charts. So we'll come back to them again. Here, these are people who watch these charts. And they see that the stock went up, or the market went up, doesn't matter, to a certain level, and then fell back, and then went up again, and fell back. So what they will say is, oh, here's the resistance level, right? It's not going to go above that. And here's the support level. It's not going to go below that until it does, because eventually it will. And that is called a breakout. And it will either break out to the top or it will break out to the bottom. In other words, if the market doesn't go up or down, it will stay the same. But eventually it will go up or down. Are you with me? Understand? And they will tell you with absolute certainty, this is the resistance level, this is the support level. Well, we know by empirical evidence that in the short term, the prices are random. So what these people are doing is just superimposing a pattern upon something, and we'll take a look at that in a bit. Psychological barriers. The Dow can't go below 16,000 or can't go above 16,000, 1,800. Moving averages. Let's take a look at a moving average. The idea is to go back 15 days or 50 days or 200 days and watch the average of the stock, which smooths out the bumps and grinds. So I'll show you how to do this. And this is by the way, here, Betsy, here you go. Betsy was asking me this. Chapter 8, the assignment is a bonus assignment. And I passed it out, didn't I? I passed it out on Tuesday. So if you weren't here on Tuesday, come get it. It's a bonus assignment. And what you're going to do is try to do what I'm just going to do now. And you don't have to know what you're doing. You only have to act like you know what you're doing, because I don't know what I'm doing. And so you can basically act like you know what you're doing. That doesn't matter what I use. Let's just take a look at Qualcomm. So we're going to look at Qualcomm. And over here, they used to have two others, which were actually easier to use. This new one is not as easy to use, but it's slicker, it's slower, it crashes more often, so it must be better. So let's pick Charting Interactive. And this is just Yahoo. There are dozens of these places. Some of them are going to charge you. They're going to want you to sign up for $20 or $50 a month. And so we're going to take a look at the 5-year. We're going to take a look at the 5-year. And now, what do we do? What we do now is we say we want some indicators. And there are dozens of these things, folks. We're just going to look at a few. George is smiling because this is... What? Oh, you want the candlestick chart?
Yeah.
Okay, where is it?
It should be on there.
Yeah, but we're doing 5 years. You're doing like 3 weeks, right? The candlestick chart's not going
to
be very
good. Yeah, I go up to 6 months or a year on the candlestick chart.
You go up to 6 months or a year? Well, I'm going to do 5 years. So let's stick with the line chart. We'll show you some candlestick charts in a bit. But we're going to do a simple moving average. And, of course, you would need to familiarize, if you really got into this technical analysis, You would need to read all about these. What the hell is a Bollinger Band? What's an exponential moving average? Well, it's just a, you know, it's using not just linear, it's using the derivative or whatever. But let's do simple moving average. We're going to do 50-day, and that's the one that it automatically gives you. And then let's put another one on there. And then what you got to do is it used to be so easy, but now you have to go over here. Okay, get rid of that. You have to go over here and say, I want 200 days. And it's a little easier to see if you go to medium. And so here, we're going to go to medium. And so now that's not a very good one. That's not a very good one. I forget exactly who I did. But here, when you see, did we 5-year? Do we do 5-year? When you see the 50-day, the 50-day is the green, go above the 200-day moving average, that's a good sign. Okay, because you're going back 50 days and looking at the average, and then you're going back 200 days and looking at the average, and when the 50-day goes above the 100-day, or the 15-day goes above the 50-day, or the 15-minute goes above the 50, for people who have a very short time frame, that's a good sign. And if it goes below, that's a bad sign. Well, here, it went above. It was already too late. The stock had already jumped. So it didn't do us any good. And what did George say? Okay, tell us, George, how well does this work for you?
It works pretty good. I could use it in conjunction with other. It depends the kind of trader you are. Some guys just use those. Some guys use that in conjunction with, you know, like another moving average indicator, like the MACD, when they see the MACD crossover.
The MACD is the moving average
convergence
divergence. Are they asking themselves, what's the future earnings potential for Qualcomm?
No.
They're going to say no. No. Are they asking themselves, what dividends are Qualcomm paying?
No.
Are they asking themselves, what are the what's the capitalization? How much debt do they have? How much equity? Are they looking at their competitors?
No.
No. They're just looking at squiggles on a line, on a screen, and deciding whether or not they should go forward and buy the stock or sell the stock or whatever. Are you with me? Understand? So that's what I ask you to do. If you look at the assignment sheet, I ask you to do it for... Who do I ask you to do it for? I forget. Oh, Ford. I ask you to do it for Ford. But look at Coke, look at Starbucks, look at International Paper. Just play. Yes. Oh, yeah. You weren't here on Tuesday. You didn't get to? Well, it's on the back of Chapter 7. It's on the back of Chapter 7. So pass these out this way. You've got to pass them that way, Victor. Pass them that way. So let's look at Coke. Let's look at Coca-Cola and see if there's anything to be gleaned for this. And over here, go to symbol KO, and we see the, not a very exciting one, for 5 years. In fact, it never even gets above it. It doesn't go below it. So let's go 10 years. Here you go. Here you go as an example. No, it's not. It doesn't even do it. Forget Coca-Cola. That's not a good one. Must have been drunk when I said that. Which other one did I look at? International Paper. Here's one. Well, this is actually not... Well, I'm sorry.
I just want to say one more thing.
One more thing in defense of technical analysis.
Okay, so if you... Like, say, for example, you have a 50-day, a 200-day, whatever.
That's what we have. 50-day is the green.
So
200-day is the red.
Right. So once they cross, everything above the 200-day is going to look for an opportunity to buy. So you want to make sure that when it gets down to that support level, when it gets down, if you're looking at a candlestick pattern, for example, when it gets down to the 200 days, when it doesn't cross it, but when it hits it, you want to wait a little bit and see what happens. And then once that candle starts to open again, that's going to be a good sign to go in and buy. But everything below that, you're going to be looking for selling opportunities.
You got to come to my office. You got to show me this. So, I don't believe a word of it. Okay, here's an example. You see the 50-day going below the 200-day? this was the time to sell. At least that's what the technical indicator would do. But as George said, you got to look at a lot of other things. Was it a really good time to sell? Well, eventually, yes. But in the short term, you saw the damn price going up. So if you're a short-term trader, you're going to get pretty nervous. But it did turn out to be a good time to sell. Here, by the time the 50-day went over the 200-day, the price has already jumped. It's too late. So, I don't know. You have to decide whether you want
to... That's why you're waiting to come back down to that support level so you can buy it.
See, they say it with all sincerity. They really do believe their belief. Look, let me show you something, folks. I know a little bit about statistics. I took statistics in my undergrad years, and then actually worked in statistics. I took and you can model the real world with statistics, knowing a little bit about random number generators and the like, and what are called inverse cumulative distribution functions. And so what this is a simple model, statistical model, that goes back a year and randomly chooses a stock movement. And if you go look at the charts that we saw and pick different companies, you will see these patterns. Now, this is totally random, folks. And if you just press function key 9, it gives you another totally random pattern. And even when you tell people that this is totally random, they will still start to see patterns. Oh, they'll say, oh, here's the resistance level. Here's the support level. See? It's bouncing up and down between the resistance and the support level. Even if you tell them, this is totally random. We're humans. We superimpose patterns upon things, even if we know they're totally random. So all you have to do is press function key 9, and what you start to see is something that, if you've ever worked with an oscilloscope, an oscillator, what is that? White noise. It's just totally random numbers. And yet, I believe the technical analysts are guilty of superimposing these charts and the like, these patterns, upon what we know already has been shown to be totally random information. In the 3, 6, 9 months, even a year, stock prices are random. It's already been shown. Over the long term, no. Yes?
My brokers, they always tell me, the market does what it wants when it wants. So, I mean, you could be in the perfect scenario, and then you could wake up the next day and it could change. They always give you that warning.
And why is that?
Because nothing's for sure. They tell you.
Because it's random. It is rolling the dice.
They're speculating, but it's educated
speculating. Now, there's like military intelligence and jumbo shrimp. Okay, so here's an example. Another example, they use the 50-day and 20-day. When the 50-day goes below the 20-day, not the 50-day, the red, it's reversed. Red goes over the green, that was a good time to buy, too late, it's already gone up. And it doesn't... I don't believe any of it! One of the more historically popular price movement technical theories is the Dow theory. And I've had two different people who are a lot smarter than me try to explain it to me, and I can't understand it. So if you can figure it out and explain it to me in such a way that I can understand it, I will be very, very, very grateful, because then I can teach it to you. But in the meantime, it just looks to me like if the market goes up or if it goes down, it'll stay. If it does not go up or if it does not go down, it will stay the same. Right? You got three choices. It's going to go up, it's going to go down, or it's going to go sideways. And we know that's already going to happen. Yes, again, try to...
But what do you think about, like, for my stocks? I just have a 200-day moving average, on my
We're talking two different languages. I would sit down and say, what's the potential for dividends? What's the potential for earnings growth? What are their competitors doing? What's the market like? Is it shrinking? Is it growing? Is it a mature industry? You understand? They're asking me, they're saying, whoa, look at this graph. Look what it's doing. 200-day moving average is going below the 200. The 50-day moving average is going above the 200-day moving average. Isn't that a good sign for the future of the stock? And I'm saying, no, the future of the stock is according to what we believe, and it's not, both are not easy, obviously. Both are basically speculating into the future, but I consider mine investing, and your, oh, go ahead.
No, that's cool. I was just going to throw that out there anyway, because I think it's looking over a certain number of days, right? So if it's going up, and if it's better, you say, okay.
But didn't 2 minutes ago you just said the market will do what the market's going to do?
There's always that possibility, but there's that possibility either way.
Yes, it could go up, it could go down, or it could go sideways. There's three possibilities. Flip a coin. There's only two to the face of it. Yeah, the problem with the coin is only...
Yeah, if I'm an average Joe, and I'm just looking at the 200...
If you're an average Joe, you shouldn't be doing this. you know... Okay, go. All right, relative strength. The Investor's Business Daily and the Value Line have these relative strength indicators, and they show you how well the stock has done relative to the market as a whole. People, do you look at volume?
Yeah.
You do look at volume.
Yeah.
And heavy volume with prices rising is supposed to be good, and low volume with prices falling is supposed to be good. It's okay, prices are going down, but it's low volume, don't worry about it. But if it's heavy volume with prices falling, well, that's bad. Everybody runs for the hills. And if it's low volume with prices rising, well, that's not good either, because sure, prices are rising, but there's not enough volume. Volume means how much shares have traded. The breadth, not this breadth, the breadth of the market. It's called the advanced decline ratio. How many stocks, how many went up, how many went down, and supposedly when things are bullish, the advanced decline ratio should rise. There should be more going up than going down. And when the mood of investors is bearish, the advanced decline ratio should fall. But in the internet bubble, there were about 50 stocks in the S&P 500 that were skyrocketing, whereas many of the old economy stocks were either staying the same or falling. The old companies have been around for decades. And that, you know, you look at this and you say, well, it's a bear market. But no, it's a bull market because the bull is raging, but only in a certain number of technologies, stocks and the like, and we know that those crashed. And then the tick. Remember ticks? is it an uptick? Is it a downtick? Well, this is not as important anymore because of the sheer volume, and so much of the stuff is being done by computers back and forth, so who cares what the tick. It used to be that you could not short a stock unless there was an uptick. Unless the market was moving up for that stock, you couldn't do that. But now they've gotten rid of the rule because things happen so fast at the millionths of seconds that they can't even know anymore, so that whole tick is gone. Short interest. This is actually a very useful, in my humble opinion, technique, but for not the reasons that the technical analysts will tell you. They will tell you that it is important to know the short interest. Again, they're short-term oriented. When there are a high number of stocks sold short, that means supposedly the smart investors who short stocks, and I know one guy who short stocks, and he wasn't very smart at doing it, he lost a ton of money. But somehow, for some reason, short investors are somehow considered more sophisticated and are therefore supposed to know when the market is going to fall. So if you see a large number of stocks in an individual stock or the market as a whole sold short, that means run for the hills. Everything's going to fall. It's exactly the opposite for those of us who have a longer-term view. Because when a stock is sold short, as we're going to see when we get to it at the end of the semester in a few more weeks, it turns out it's like pushing down on a spring. Because all those people who sold that stock short they are required to buy it back. When you buy a stock for the long term, you can hold it forever. But when you short a stock, you have to buy it back. And so it creates a pent-up demand. And you will see this over and over again with a stock. You will see it go or the market as a whole, you will see it fall precipitously, and these are the people shorting it, or maybe people just running away from it for whatever reason, and then you'll see it bounce back up. And in August of 2002, that was my first bear market, the number of shares sold short had hit the highest number it had ever hit in the New York Stock Exchange. And they were talking about it in the office, and I said, oh, whew, that means it's near the end. And they looked at me, and they said, yeah, you're probably right, Payano. I was the rookie. And it turned out, well, we had a few more months, October 2002. But let me show you an example. What stock, want to take a look at First Solar? Let's look at the international paper at the key statistics. And if we see, it'll tell you the short interest here. Here it is. Shares outstanding, 422 million. Shares sold short, almost 11 million. So that's about what? A couple percent? 3%. Because they're about 3% of the shares are sold short, that pretty much means that investors are not expecting international paper to fall precipitously. But if we were to take a look at First Solar, I bet you it's going to be a whole lot higher because it's a much more volatile stock. And we see that about 12% of the shares, there's 100 million shares out there, and the number of sold short is, where is it? 8.99 million, which is about, you know, 12%. So that doesn't sound right. Shares short, 9 million, 100 million shares. Oh, they're looking at the float. I'm sorry, they're looking at the float. There's a difference between the shares outstanding and the float, and this is how much it's actually trading. So about 12%. So I'm sorry, no, I'm confused. Oh, that's, prior month. I'm confused at these numbers. But still, about 12% of the shares are sold short. So more investors believe that First Solar is going to go down, because when you sell short, you're expecting the price to go down, than in an international paper. You understand? But when you see this number go high, that's often a sign that it's about ready to jump back up, unless the company goes bankrupt, in which case all bets are off. If it really falls down, yes. The float is how many shares are actually trading. There are 100 million. You do a little bit of research on me, because I might be wrong on this. But my understanding is the shares outstanding are how many shares are out there. But only 73 million are actually trading at this time. For some reason, there's a goodly number that are set aside that are not trading. I'm not sure. That's a good question. Somebody needs to look that up for me. Okay, somebody look that up for me. Or I should look it up. I really should. Because I've often said, well, what's the difference? Someone said, this was, a long time ago. Someone said, oh, that just means they're not trading. I was like, okay, fine. What does that mean? Where are they? They're not in the treasury, because if they're in the treasury, then they are taken out of circulation. So that's a good question. I have to find that out. I don't really know, so I have to find out what that means. What is the actual... Look up Investopedia. Look it up in Investopedia. I think I'm right, but we'll find out. Okay, continue. Odd lot trading. For some reason, again, this technology. Technology has made this obsolete. It used to be that you were a less sophisticated, small-time investor, and you bought shares in less than 100 shares. Mom and Pop would do this. And supposedly, for some reason, Mom and Pop were stupid and didn't know what the hell they were doing. So when the number of odd lots, less than 100 shares, would rise, that was supposedly a sign that the market was going to fall. But technology has made odd lot trading commonplace. We don't need round lots anymore. So I don't put any credence whatsoever in this, but you'll hear people discuss it. Now, this is something that is actually very useful. We've talked about contrarian opinions, and some technical analysts will use the contrarian opinion, which is, I actually have some. When everybody's running one way, that's when I usually, the worst place to be. The theory of the people are very optimistic, that's a predictor of falling prices for the market, and if people are very pessimistic, that's a predictor of rising prices. But then you can get into these scenarios, everybody act real bad. Everybody say, the market's going to fall, the market's going to fall, and that will make the market rise, right? You see what I'm saying? You could You could drive yourself insane doing this. But there's this one guy, Mark Hulbert, who since the early 80s has subscribed to all these different newsletters that tell people when to buy, when to sell. And he has created this index, he called the Hulbert Index. When a vast majority of all these newsletters are really, really bullish, the market has invariably fell. And when the vast majority of these are very, very bearish, the market has invariably rose. So it's an excellent example of the contrarian opinion. And he will tell people, he's on Market Watch on Wall Street Journal, he will tell people, oh, look out, because everybody's bullish. Or now's the time to buy, everybody's bearish. But again, it's a difficult thing to be a contrarian because historically the market has gone up 3 times more often than it goes down. So you have to be able to sit on your hands and wait for things to get really bad before you run in and buy, like Buffett did in 2008. And then here, we already discussed some charting, support levels, resistance levels, the candlestick charts, which, big deal, head and shoulders. This is the only one that they asked on the Series 7. This is 1998, folks. But the only question they asked about technical analysis was, could I identify this chart? That was it. So here is the charting examples that that George was talking about with the candlestick charts. Now, why are the candlestick charts better? Tell me why.
Because it shows the open, the close, the high, and the low.
Right.
And you don't get that with.
And that is, and why is that important?
Because it gives you a better idea of the sentiment of the market over a period of time.
Until,
according to the people that you don't like.
Right. Until tomorrow.
Yeah.
When it changes.
That's what I was taught.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. And then here's the candlestick. If it's light or red or green or whatever, that means it went up. If it's dark, it went down. Here's the dark cloud cover.
Yeah, the thing that they always tell me is the body of the candle is the essence of price movement. So the thicker the body is, the stronger the momentum is, right? So
until tomorrow, when it changes. Okay, I just want to make sure. And then this one is really bad. I don't know why, but that's a Japanese word, I think, for something really bad. If anybody wants to look it up, anybody knows Japanese. Here's the head and shoulders. You know, you got the neckline, there's the left shoulder, the head. Doesn't it look like a head and shoulders? It doesn't?
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, and here are some of the examples we saw. The resistance, the support level, triangles. There's the breakout to the downside, breakout to the upside. And then flags and pennants. Now, supposedly, a pennant is good, but a flag is not so, or is it the other way around? I don't remember. You decide. You decide whether you want to investigate this. And what I've told you is all I know. But this is from the Random Walk Down Wall Street, which I said is a great book. He skewers the technical analyst, he skewers the fundamental analyst, and he skewers the efficient market analyst too. So he has a fun time with everybody. You got to be skeptical, right? If we weren't skeptical, we'd still be doing leeches. Remember leeches, right? It must be good. It's taking away the bad blood. The market's rise after a period of reaccumulation is a bullish sign. Nevertheless, fulcrum characteristics are not yet clearly present, and a resistance area exists 40 points higher in the Dow. So it is clearly premature to say the next leg of the bull market is up. If, in the coming weeks, a test of the lows holds and the market breaks out of its flag, a further rise would be indicated. Should the lows be violated, a continuation of the intermediate term downward trend is called for. In view of the current situation, it is a distinct possibility that traders will sit in the wings awaiting a clearer delineation of the trend, and the market will move in a narrow trading range. Now, what do you think the guy said? Or gal, we don't know who it is. This is real, folks, by the way. This was really technical analyst that was burped out by some analyst making $500,000 a year on Wall Street plus bonuses. I think he said, If the market does not go up or down, it will remain the same. Okay? Is that what you got out of that? Something like that. Yeah, it's from The Random Walk Down Wall Street. So check it out, folks. It's a great book to read. And lastly, our very last slide on stocks. Who wants to be an analyst? Who wants to be a registered representative? Stockbroker? Who wants to get into it? And Steve's saying, no way. No? It's a great, I love it. I'm lucky, though. You know, I'm lucky. I don't have to go out, as they say in the industry, eat what I kill. You have to go out and find people to sign up. I live off of my teaching salary, thank you very much. But it's a lot of fun.
But they all hate you because you're teaching it to normal people and they don't want you to know this stuff.
Well, probably some of them do. But most of them don't want the normal people. They want very wealthy individuals. So that's who they go after. They don't care. You're going to put $50 a month away? Go away. We're not interested. I spent hours with this one woman. She had an 18-month-old kid, and she was running after him the whole time I was explaining it to her. And then she would go, about an hour and a half or so, or 2 hours, and the kid was bouncing off walls. And she says, well, you know, I think I'll talk to my husband about this. I'm kind of tired right now. So I left. And then we said, made an appointment. I came back. I had to explain the whole thing over to her from scratch. And the kid's bouncing off. He's a beautiful little child, but he was just... And then she goes, well, you know, I better talk to my husband again. We didn't get a chance to talk about it. So, okay. So I came back a third time. And she goes, you know, I better sign up now because I don't think I'm going to... Because this is their mother, you know. So, and then we explain how I get paid. And she goes, well, how do you get paid? I'm going to explain it to you. So for every $50 I get, you know, every $50 you put in, I get a dollar. She's going to put $50 a month away. She goes, that means for the whole 12 months, you're going to make $12? I said, yeah, that's about right. And she looked at me like, you're really stupid. You've been here six hours, something like that. It was total with me, and you're going to get $12 for 50 cents an hour, whatever. It's all right, I don't mind. So you're going to have to take the Series 7. That's a tough one. If you want to be in the insurance world, you only need to take the Series 6, which is just mutual funds. But 7 is mutual funds, stocks, bonds, limited partnerships, options, futures. What else? Yeah, 6 hours, folks. 3 hours in the morning, an hour for lunch, and then 3 hours in the afternoon. It's grueling. It takes about 2 months of studying 1 to 2 hours a day to pass this test. And we'll show you some of the toughest questions later on when we get to options and shorting. But much of the stuff is what we're covering in this class. In fact, I treat this class as if it were the beginning of your studies for the Series 7. The Series 66 is pretty easy. It's ethical things and the like. It's an hour, and it takes about 2 to 4 weeks. You must be sponsored by a brokerage firm. And there are some brokerage firms which exist simply to sponsor people. Yes?
Are there brokers that deal with both sides of the spectrum, like normal people like you, and they also deal with rich people?
Not so much anymore, because what they'll tell you, you say, look, I'll go to Morgan Stupid, and I'll say, you know, I want to invest. I got $50 a month. I'll go, you know, we'd really like to help you, but why don't you go to Scottrade, or why don't you go to a mutual fund company? Or I don't know. Why don't you try? See what they say. Because I have heard, not personally because I don't go to them, but I've heard them say, well, I don't take anybody for less than $500,000. Unless they have $500,000 to invest, I'm not interested. So they'll just say, you know, go to a Schwab or go to someplace where you don't even get a broker. It's all electronic. And if you, by the way, you know, Schwab will charge you $9 or Scottrade will charge you $7. But if you call up and want to have a broker assisted, they'll add $30 to it. They'll add $30 to the trade if you want to get the advice of a broker. Yeah, they got to make a living, right? Hey, they got those BMW payments, big money wasters. They're not cheap. And that is our discussion of stocks. We're done. We're done stocks. Are you excited? I like stocks. The stocks are fun. That's where the action is. And so, to review, we want you to go back over chapters 5 and 6, constant perpetual discounted cash flow model, everything we talked about in chapter 5, the different stock types, the indices, dividends, all the other things we talked about stocks. And then ratio analysis, efficient markets, and technical analysis. Now, what do you want to do? Yes, question. Oh, you don't have a question? Oh, sorry. Anybody have a question? Yes.
Your personal opinion, I don't want to tell you, Kramer. I think he's a scam artist.
Well, I wouldn't use the word scam artist, but he's He is more entertainment than he is education and advice. But there is some advice there. There's some education there. But he's more of a showman, right? And that's why people watch him and they love him. And he's, don't get me wrong, the guy is brilliant. He knows, you know, he knows, he's like a sponge. He knows so much about different companies, the CEOs, all this stuff about companies. He's like a walking encyclopedia. But his showmanship, I think, is a little degrading to the industry, but that's my opinion. I don't watch television either, so you got the wrong guy. But he's a TV personality more than anything else. Anybody thoughts? Any thoughts on that? Yeah.
Oh, not
okay.
Six hours.
No, 3 hours in the morning. You get an hour for lunch, and then 3 hours in the afternoon. And they'll tell you. Many of the, not many, up to, I think, 10 or so questions. There's 120 questions in the morning, 120 questions, is that right? 120, I forget now. But it's 3 hours, 120 questions, 3 hours, 120 questions, 3 hours in the afternoon. And they start off easy and get harder and harder and harder and harder, and then they start getting easier and easier and easier and easier. And the first couple of questions were so easy, I was like, oh boy, I hope it stays this easy. But they will warn you, they will tell you, some of the questions are not even graded. We're just throwing these questions out to you just to see how you react. And you're not even graded. And there were things in there I had no idea what the hell they were talking about. And none whatsoever. I figured that must be one of the questions because I studied really hard. I had, I don't know how many. I threw them away. That was so stupid. I was like, I couldn't lend them out to people. I had all these flashcards. And you get the books, and you have to take all the practice exams. That's the main thing. That's why, you know, people say, why are you asking chapter 5 again? Why are you showing up chapter 6 again? Because that's what, when you take the series 7, you take these practice exams over and over and over and over again. That's how you. It's mostly all multiple choice, but there are calculations, and then they will have the four different choices, and they will trick you. Wait till we get to options and futures and shorting and margining. You'll see how easy it is to screw up. Because if you go this way instead of that way, you get a totally different answer, and one of the answers will be if you went the wrong way. They don't make it easy. But most people will pass it, if not on the first time, on the second time. Because they will then respect it. Because you warn people, I've told people, you need to make sure you know options and shorting and margining down. Because in the exam, there's about 7 or 8 different sections. You have to pass with a 70%, but you have to pass every section with 70%. You can't just blow off options or blow off margining. You have to know every single chapter.
How much is it?
For me, I forget exactly, but it was over $500, but that was 15 years ago or so. So I'm not sure exactly how much it is now. But the brokerage firm, if they like you, they'll pay for that. They'll pay for your training. They'll pay for the exam. You got to get your fingerprints. They do a background check. The FBI is going to call people. Make sure you're not a scam artist. There's an awful lot of shenanigans that go on in the industry. Questions? Thoughts? Anybody else? All right, now we have a half an hour, folks. And we went over the problems from Chapter 6 and...